We're going to be talking with Lynn Cockrum Murphy today, and her book is called Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. It's a short but powerful true story of loss, starting with a house fire that killed her sisters and father and left her badly burned when she was just 30 months old. And it follows a life that grew out of that tragedy. Instead of giving in to a family history of dysfunction, she writes about dealing with loss, family alcoholism and chaos, an eating disorder, and shows that there is a way to move beyond the events of the past. Interwoven in the story are actions, steps, tools, and even a reading and movie list to help you move forward into a life filled with spirituality, meaning, and purpose. The story is a model of hope, action, and success. Lynn Cochran is a intuitive consultant. She specializes in helping people move forward on their spiritual path. She channels, offers theta healing readings, access bars, and facilitates physical healing, emotional growth, and removes blocks to a life of joy, meaning, and purpose. It's our pleasure to have on the program today Lynn Cockrum Murphy. Hi, Lynn. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very good, and thank you for having me.
Yours is an interesting story. I read your book and liked it a lot. Why don't you give us an overview of your backstory?
Okay. The book starts with the house fire that happened when I was 2.5 and explains how my father saved my life, but wasn't able to survive because he kept going back into the house trying to save my sisters. So after that, it was just Mom and myself. And, of course, my mother was very wounded by that, by all the loss. She remarried a couple years after that, and that stepfather died in a logging accident when I was 9. There was also abuse by a different male adult relative. After my stepdad died, my mom remarried, and she married a man with a drinking problem, and that was a very abusive relationship. There was physical abuse. Her marriage prior to that had emotional abuse. Let's see, about 10 years old, I was abused by another adult male relative, a different one, and then... So at 17, I got out of the house because living in my parents' crazy drinking and abusive situation was too much for me. So got out when I was 17 and really questioned the foundation. My family had raised me going to multiple churches and questioned that foundation quite a bit because I didn't see that faith, that belief system, providing them any peace. So, in fact, they took me to churches, but they didn't go to church. They went to the bar. So, it really made me question everything. And in that, I studied multiple religions and developed a faith and a spirituality and a daily spiritual practice that really feeds my soul, gives me great peace, and probably has a lot to do with why I don't live in the kind of dysfunction that I grew up with. The last thing I'd want to say about all that is when I was 25, my mother and stepfather bought a bar, and that to me was pretty appalling. I remember saying to her, you know, Mom, don't you realize you have a drinking problem and this isn't a good idea? And she poo-pooed that and had a rationalizations about it. And within 2 months, that bar was robbed she was killed, and my stepfather lived maybe another 2 years, and I believe died of survivor's guilt besides health conditions. So those were the first 25 years of my life, and because of that seeking and searching, why does the religion that my family gave me not really work for them? What does work? And believing that there is something greater than myself that would care, would provide assistance, would always be there, is able to be there to a degree that humans are not. And so I went for that. And it's really paid off. It's really worked for me.
Lynn, have you had addictive behaviors in your life?
You know, a lot of what we talk about, I'm also a licensed substance abuse counselor. We talk about primary addictions, that there's like often one that a person has trouble shaking, and there are others that are not a problem. So when I was really young, when I was a teenager, I indulged in all kinds of drug behavior besides alcohol. And it wasn't hard for me to walk away from all the drug use. And I still drink socially and don't seem to have a problem with that. The area of addiction that tripped me up was the eating disorder. Using food for peace. Using food to calm emotions. I think that pattern started when I was about 6 years old, or at least that's the first time I remember being obsessed with sugar. So, yeah, it's been that. And although I used a recovery program for that, it is something that it doesn't rule my life, but I'll notice it will crop up every now and then, and I have to apply all the tools that I know so that it doesn't win. And the other one besides the food addiction is I've gone through periods of that shopping compulsion, you know, where after work I'd be exhausted from work and my feet would hurt, but I still had to go shopping to get a piece of clothing, to get something. And it felt addictive. And I remember standing in the store a couple of times going, God, get me out of here. This is crazy. Get me out of this store. So, That one isn't bothering me at all anymore, but it sure did for a while. So yeah, they say that it's genetic. They say it's also environmental. You know, that it can be created by how you were brought up. But they also say that there's a genetic component, and I would say, yeah, I've had that.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you don't disagree with me giving you my point of view. Is that I don't believe that. I believe that addiction is a spiritual disease, and that so many people suffer from so many different kinds of addictive behaviors with so many different kinds of family backgrounds, genetics, and all that kind of stuff, that's not the cause. I believe the cause is low self-esteem and lack of consciousness. Now, I know you're a spiritual seeker, so I know that you have been trying to gain more and more spiritual consciousness, but didn't you have a low self-esteem based on your early life with your mother, who was dysfunctional and did not give you unconditional love?
Definitely I had low self-esteem. I also see that I had that victim mentality, that life happens to you and you're powerless. And I think that fed into it also.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so thankfully you've been able to throw off all that earlier teaching or non-teaching, whatever, and be able to make a powerful life with purpose. That's really, really wonderful.
I like that word. When I did my doctorate and studied resilience, and it was very self-serving, I studied resilience because I wanted to know how is it I came out of that family and all those disasters and had such a quality marriage and was able to have my career as a special ed teacher. Why did I get to have it so good? And resilience theory explained a lot of that to me.
Okay.
It's certainly the ability to use the tools that you have and to overcome.
Right. Now, you, in your book, you give some action steps and tools, recommendations and everything. Of course, they're going to want to buy your book to get that, but give us a couple ideas on action steps that you can take to get to where you got to.
Okay. Well, I think two of the key ones is seeking, finding the spiritual path that works for you, and asking questions and checking with people and studying to find what really feeds your soul. So for me, as I said, as a child, exposure to the several Christian churches didn't seem to do much for me. But now, decades later, when I look at what is theology and what is a deeper study of Christianity, from that perspective, like, for instance, reading Thomas Merton, from that perspective, there's great depth and great wonder. There's so much available there. But that spiritual path can also be something of your own creation, created to a power greater than yourself. So seeking is one. Questioning, because I think we're taught a lot of things that really mean nothing. I remember one is don't speak until you're spoken to, and who do you think you are? Just all kinds of little things to control and keep you in your place. And I think that we are beautiful gifts of God. We are wonderful beings when we allow that to come out in ourselves. So I believe in questioning old teachings, things that don't make sense. Stand up for yourself.
Okay.
So then some of the other tools and actions is study people who have what you want and ask them how they got that and learn from them. Be malleable. Be flexible. Allow yourself to change. You can also, I studied Buddhism for a while and became a meditator. And so daily meditation is probably one of the most effective tools I found for me. Not everybody can meditate, but for me, I start my day with that conscious connection, with that peaceful place, which I think of as God, but we also call it Source or Creator. And that quiet time then kind of creates, a best word for it is equanimity, that inner peace, and then I have that all day. And I notice, compared to when I don't meditate, that that stability inside of me isn't as much so as when I do meditate. A couple other things, journaling is a really nice tool for getting things out, for asking questions, for healing. Autobiography is another tool. Writing about your whole life or writing about the parts of your life that you really want to express or understand. You don't have to share these things with anyone, and yet you can if you have someone you trust. I also think that therapy and therapists and counselors and recovery programs are all really powerful tools. So there must be, you know, a couple dozen different ways, and it's a matter of finding what works for you, what gives you peace, what gives you hope, and makes you feel like you're moving forward.
Okay. Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. Our guest today is Lynn Cockrum Murphy. Lynn, how did they get a copy of your book?
Well, my book is available a couple of different ways. It's on Amazon in both Kindle and in soft cover. You also can go to my book's website, It's lynncockrummurphy.com, and Lynn is L-Y-N-N-E. Cockrum is C-O-C-K-R-U-M. Then there's a hyphen, and then murphy.com. So either way, and I have another website, desertjewel.org, that people can look at to learn more about me and the classes that I teach and the one-on-one work that I do with people.
Okay. Now, thinking about your story, I was thinking that one of the things that causes a child to have a good self-esteem is if their parents provide them with a safe environment, and if at least one of their parents shows them unconditional love. Now, you didn't have either one of those two things, did you?
I don't think so. No, it wasn't safe. And, you know, I, as an adult, after all the work I've done on the trauma of childhood, I do realize that my mother loved me greatly. But as a young woman, I didn't know that. And so her own pain and difficulty made what appeared that she was unable to be there for me emotionally. On the other hand, you know, there's a gift in that. It took me a long time to figure this out. But the gift is she taught me go to God. And even though she didn't do it, it made me question all that. She didn't show me the love that I wanted. And somehow I figured out go to God to get the love that you want. And so she gave me a gift in that. So I do know that the one source for everything I need, all that unconditional love that, you know, you mentioned that I didn't get or I didn't think that I got, I get it from the greatest source of all.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. Every human being needs at least one source of unconditional love to have a good mental health. And if you can't get it from your parents or your children or your partner, you can always get it from God. And so there's always a place where you can get that unconditional love. And that's one of the things that we need to work on, is making sure that we're getting it on a daily basis. Now, I want to talk to you about suffering, because your subtitle of your book is Steps to Leave Suffering Behind. And I think you said in your book, suffering has purpose. Could you explain that?
For me, the suffering was a motivator to get out of that state of being, to get out of that kind of life, to change my circumstances besides changing my mind. So I don't know that all people encounter suffering as a motivator, but for me, even today, if I get down in the dumps or don't like something in my life, I can only tolerate that for a day or two, and then I'm very motivated to take some action, to call someone, to get down on my knees, to increase my meditation, to do some writing, to talk to my husband and get his viewpoint on it. Absolutely. Suffering is a motivator for me.
Okay, now you also talked about suffering as an illusion. Now, why an illusion?
With my spiritual practice, I find that when I am in communion with, it's very, very hard to describe, with the totality of God, to the extent that I as a human being can do that. When I am in that peaceful place, there are no questions, there are no wants, there is no suffering. There is nothing but love or peace or calmness. And so I've come to think that there is no suffering. It's an illusion that comes with being human, living on Earth. And that we can transcend that in our connection with Source.
Okay, so you're saying that no matter what it is that you're going through, it's an illusion and can be transcended by going back to God or Creator or Source.
It appears to be very, very real. You know, a person going through a surgery for a life-threatening illness, that's very real and very painful. But the truth is, there's a layer or a level either underneath or outside of all of that where there's no pain, there's no suffering, there's no fear. There's just peace.
I know in my own life back many years ago that I went through a time of suffering and thought it was the worst thing in the world. And yet 20 years down the road, I changed my opinion and decided it was the best thing in the world. So I think that that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, is an illusion. It could be bad or it could be good. It's all how you think about things.
It's really true, and how our perspective does change over time. And so that means there's something not so real. It was more like perspective at the time. Humans were very complex, and we see things on many levels, but I do think there's a place within us that is still and quiet and offers us all the peace we could ever desire.
Right. Let me hit another topic real quick. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but define karma for me.
Karma is totally based upon the law of cause and effect. So that's just one of the foundational laws of life on Earth, just like gravity is. So I flip the switch, electricity runs through, and the light turns on. If I were a poor quality mother and abused my child, then my child would have a real hard time growing up to be a happy, balanced human being. If I hurt animals, there is some way that God would bring that back to me later on. So I think sayings like what comes around goes around. There are several sayings in the Bible, or quotes from the Bible, that are about that also. So it's the Buddhist view that is the law of cause and effect, but it's also just almost scientific, and it's addressed in Christianity just with different terminology.
Yes. So what do you think about people who say, well, you know, I know people who are terrible, mean, evil, and everything like that, and they have good lives, and they have all the money that they want, and everything like that.
That's such a good question.
What if karma was the truth, but it wasn't relegated only to this lifetime?
Right, and I think that does explain why we don't always see the consequences for the person, but I have faith that, you know, there's a creator, a source, much wiser and incomprehensible, actually, to me, who takes care of business. And that's why we have laws in effect like gravity or magnetism, etc., that take care of these things. And I don't have to worry about it. It just is... It's funny how there's almost a blend between the scientific and the spiritual with things like that. I truly believe that it's taken care of. And who am I to judge? You know, what appears to be God-awful to me in a human being, I try to let that be and let God take care of it and just focus on my own life.
Right, right. Okay, we're in the last minute of the program. And the program is Share Your Mission. And I believe that everybody has a mission, and if they will find out what that is and pursue it, that they will have an extremely happy or more content, peaceful, joyful life. So tell our audience, what is Lynn's mission?
My mission is to continue to grow as a human being with my connection with my source, and then to shine that out into the world and share that with the world to assist anyone who is looking for that kind of a connection, and to encourage people to be the shining being that they already are, to open that up in themselves and let that light shine out. I believe it already exists, and I want to support people in that process, and I think my book helps with that.
I think it does too, Lynn. Thanks so much for being on the program today and bringing your special talent to our audience. Living Hope, Lynn Cockrum Murphy. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.